Lecture 11, Pleasure and the Right Life.
The 10th book of Aristotle's Ethics is an effort by Aristotle to consider certain topics which he has not yet been able to treat, and then also to return to the general subject, happiness, which he thinks is the very nature and the very important purpose of ethics, cultivating human happiness. In this lecture, we'll try to consider the first half of that book, namely on one of those topics that he's not done yet, pleasure. And then in the last lecture, we'll have a chance to consider happiness and to do a bit of review of the whole. In the first part of Book 10, one sees Aristotle pick up the threads from some remarks he had made at the end of Book 7. And so the first thing I'd like to do is just to examine what it is that he says about pleasure. But then after having a chance to take note of his own survey of opinions and to look at the his own settled position in the matter, then we'll have a chance to look at some of the philosophical questions that are associated with pleasure. They very much invite our own philosophical consideration, and I think it will be more and more obvious as we've gotten through more of the ethics how and why Aristotle takes the position that he does. First then, what is it that he says? Well, at the very beginning of Book 10 of the Nicomachean Ethics, he returns to that material that he left off at the end of Book 7, just before he began his treatise on friendship that we've been considering in some recent lectures. Namely, he had considered the notion that some people hold that pleasures are never good. Likewise, he had considered the notion that pleasure might be the supreme good of human life. And he had envisioned the third point of view that at least bodily pleasures are bad. He considers each of these in turn, and he tries to do a critical analysis of those positions. Namely, certain views, such as the view that eventually came to be the Stoic position, regarded all pleasures as bad. The Stoics were very, very insistent that anything which disturbed one's peace of mind, anything that took one out of a complete control so that you yourself had domination and mastery of life, all of that was deeply suspect. Aristotle finds that this can't possibly be the right answer precisely because of the pleasure that does accompany any number of virtuous actions and virtuous habits that we might develop. But equally, he is insistent that the answer can't be exactly the reverse, namely that pleasure can't be the end-all and be-all of life, in the way that it is made to be the chief purpose of human living by the movement that eventually comes to be known as Epicureanism, namely that there are going to be certain true pleasures and certain pleasures that would in fact be disintegrative, pleasures which would in fact harm us. And knowing the difference between those certainly adds merely to having any such pleasure. Of course, choosing the right pleasures to have as opposed to the wrong ones. And so he has reasons for holding that the knowledge that one would gain would certainly add something to any possible pleasure, so pleasure alone can't possibly be the chief good of life. And then he considers this notion that perhaps all bodily pleasures are bad, and he's very much alert to the fact that, no, this can't possibly be the case, that we are individuals, that we are beings, that our minds and bodies, that we are true unities, and that some of the pleasures that are involved with our bodies are things that are quite good, but that these sort of pleasures don't exhaust the whole realm of pleasures. There are intellectual pleasures and there are pleasures of spirit. So he's very mindful that none of the extreme positions which he had encountered could possibly be right. And in a way that's very typical of Aristotle, he aims at a moderate position. I think this is very typical of Aristotle throughout his work in any subject, and we've certainly seen it to be typical of Aristotle throughout the ethics, namely that he's interested in a moderate position, having considered excesses on either side, excesses and deficiencies, and he's so intent upon making a moderate position. Here in this particular section, then, at the beginning of Book 10, he repeats what he had considered at the end of Book 7 and then takes it a bit further. And this is a reason that many Aristotelian scholars think that Books 8 and 9 on friendship may well have been a separate treatise which came to be inserted later, because what he picks up with at the end of, from the end of Book 7, what he picks up with here in the beginning of Book 10 is almost exactly the same.